checking out for a live or spontaneous conversation until 8 o'clock.
Or spontaneous.
Thank you, Mark. Number 1165, August 7th, 1974. For those of our listeners who are wondering why Mark Hewitt is with us tonight instead of Sunny Carpenter, she's at home with a sick little boy who's got tonsillitis, I understand, and we hope it'll be cleared up soon and Sunny will be back with us tomorrow night. Our guests on Beeline this evening are Mike Dalton, Nancy Mendenhall, and Cora Cook. And they've just recently returned to Fairbanks from hiking the Chilkoot Pass. And for those of our listeners who aren't acquainted with these ladies, I'm not going to ask them their age because that isn't polite, but I think our listeners should know they're in the over 30 group.
So no, excuse me.
Go ahead.
We're 29 and holding.
Oh, all right. Yeah, that's a better way to put it. Anyway, I think it's really great that they undertook this trip. And we're going to be talking about it tonight. Let's sort of go around the table and identify each of you. Nancy, you're known for your activities on the school board, and tell us about how you got interested in making this trip.
Well, I got interested because Mike and Cora had talked about it, and we just kept talking about it, and we kept telling everybody else about it, and pretty soon, after you tell enough people, you just have to go out and do it. So we did.
Okay, Mike, you're Senator Stevens' aide in Fairbanks. Many people know you for that activity. You're also involved in a lot of other things, I know, but how did you come to get interested in making this trip?
I've wanted to make the trip for a long, long time. I never did think I'd hike the trail. It was just too tough, I thought. And I thought about it, and I've read about it, and I've read about talked to some of the Stampeders who went over the trail in 98. Not many of those left, by the way. And then last summer when I was in Dawson, Cora was with me, Cora and I, and Mrs. Coyle, who went to Dawson when she was in 1900. We went over there for Discovery Day. It turned out to be Fairbanks Day almost in Dawson. We counted something like 55 Fairbanksons over there, not planned or anything. At any rate, on Discovery Day, there were some Fairbanksons who came paddling down the river. They'd hiked the Chilkoot Trail. Among them were Marge Egan, Mrs. Dan Egan, and Mary Cook, and her sister Pat Sather. And they came in one group, and two of their 12-year-old sons. Another group were some canoeists, including was Judge William Taylor and his son, Jerry Norum, Jim McCord, some others. I thought, well, gee whiz, if they can do it, I can do it. I always wanted to, so I got to thinking about it during the winter. I planned to do the Yukon part of it, but as Nancy said, we were talking and joking and talking and joking. Pretty soon it became serious. I think Cora was the one who talked us into it.
No. Is that true, Cora?
No. But I was inspired by this Dawson trip when we did see Marge Egan and Pat Sather and Mary Cook. And so from there on, we kind of kept on building and building and working, and we did go.
Did the three of you go on your own, or were you part of another group, an organized trip, or what? Did you just pick up your bags and go?
We picked up our bags a lot of times during the trip. We went with a group that started out as Skagway, a group that it was kind of was called Klondike Safaris, and they furnished the tents, sleeping, anything you want. You can take your own tent, your own tent, your own sleeping bag, your own cooking utensils, everything. But they will furnish it. So I thought, for a first-timer, who's 29 and holding, I better let them furnish it. So we went with them. There were 16 of us who hiked together.
Five were guides?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Four or five.
I know a little bit about the history of the Chilkoot Trail in Alaska, but I'd like to ask one of you to, first of all, we can't show a map, but maybe we can describe the route and then get into some of the history of the Chilkoot Trail.
Nancy, you've looked at the maps. We looked at maps at your house. You know more about maps than we do.
Well, I don't have a map here. Well, the trail starts at Dyea, which I think is about 8 miles from Skagway, and goes along the Tioga River.
Tioga.
Or Dyea.
Yeah, but it's it goes along the river.
Okay.
And
river.
Mm-hmm. and runs east of the White Pass, which was another trail that was used, and which the train goes over, and goes up as far as
Taya
River, and then goes up through the Chilkoot Pass, which is an old pass and was used by the Indians many years before the white man came to the to this country. And this was their way of getting to the interior Indians, and they did
they
protect
traded.
This. Yeah,
yeah,
they
traded
protected
with interior
this pass.
Indians.
Yeah. And so this was really that old trail, and it ends at Bennett, where all the gold seekers, of course, got into boats and started down
after they
the
made
Yukon.
The boats.
Yeah.
The Chilkoot Pass is the one that, when you look at the old pictures, you see the lines of men stacking the goods up that steep hill, right?
There were two main passes out of Skagway during the Gold Rush, and one was the White Pass, and many people hiked that, but it was longer. The Chilkoot was shorter, but it was steeper at the summit. And the Chilkoot is the one that most of the hikers went over. But the White Pass Railroad goes through, that's where it gets its name, is White Pass. It goes through the White Pass, which is, there are two separate passes. Two separate routes.
The steep part is called the Golden Stairs.
Is it as steep as it looks in the pictures?
Yes, it is.
It's steeper.
Yeah.
I think.
How many miles long is the trail now?
From Dyea to Bennett, I think it's about 33 miles.
And when did you start your hike, and when did you finish it?
Well, Cora and I, well, we all started on Tuesday noon from Dyea. And Cora and I arrived
last month, in July.
Mm-hmm. And on Tuesday, and Cora and I got to the train station at Bennett at Friday noon. So that was 3 days, which I think was
it was Thursday, Friday,
rapid.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, actually, on the trail, 4 days.
Three full days. Mm-hmm. And then Mike was going on the Cora and I were coming home. Mike was going on the river, so she didn't. We had left her, and she got there, I think, Friday night.
Good friends. They just left me on the trail. No, they wanted to catch a train. They wanted to catch the train to Whitehorse, and they had to be in at Bennett Station. So they left our camp. They broke camp about 6 o'clock in the morning and left it. According to my notes, you left at 6:20, Cora.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. And then we arrived at Bennett that same day, only we didn't leave our campsite until 10:30 or so in the morning.
Did you ever figure out how many miles per hour you ended up walking? Or how many total hours that you spent on the trail?
I could total it up. I kept a daily log of what we did.
That might be interesting to you.
The last day we were on the trail, actually, 4 hours and 45 minutes or something like actual walking.
For 10 miles.
Yeah, that last 10 miles.
Now, did you actually carry your food and sleeping bags or whatever on your backs?
Well, we didn't, but the guides did. We carried our own personal belongings and our sleeping bags.
How many pounds would you say you were carrying?
About 25.
Oh, that's a lot.
Well, no, it really isn't, because this is personal belongings and the sleeping bags. We didn't carry any tents. We carried
some cooking utensils.
No food. Well, that's right.
But none of the food. So it seemed like a lot of weight, but I guess it was really very light.
Well, we didn't carry the food, but some of the boys did.
But we weighed our packs before we left. They weighed about 25 pounds apiece. And then by the time I got to Bennett, I was carrying... They ask you not to take any relics. There's not many relics left along the route. So I just took pictures. And I did snatch a few little rocks. Mm-hmm. I hope the Sierra Club will forgive me. But I had to have a little memento from the summit. So by the time I got to Bennett, my pack was a little heavier, because I did pick up a rock here and a rock there. Just a little one.
How many rocks did you end up with?
Oh, I have a memento from the summit and from the pass and from Lake Lindeman and Bennett and Marsh Lake and Tagish Lake and Lake LaBarge. And I stopped at Five Finger Rapids going down the river, and we took one of our boats, and two of us were deposited out on one of the islands. And I got some really nice pictures of the other boat going back and through the rapids in color and in black and white. Mm-hmm. So I had to get a little sample of that.
Did you...
I've only got about 15 pounds of rocks.
Did you label your rocks as you went along so you could tell them apart?
I just put them in little plastic sacks.
Oh, that sounds great.
I always carry baggies with me when I go camping or hiking.
That's
or on
a good
a trip.
Way to do it. You can save them.
Well, especially when your hairpins fall all over your suitcase, you can pick them all up and put them in a baggie.
The most useful thing I ever found on a trip like that was paper towels. I don't know why, but boy, they just seem like if you had a roll of paper towels, you're all set for anything. Did the three of you do any pre-hike training to get yourselves in condition for this?
We certainly did. We'd get up at 5 o'clock two or three mornings a week and go out and walk up and down Allerhaven, Mr. Doom, before breakfast.
Oh, wow. That's
so
ambitious.
We did that. Well, it was better to find out where our problems were before.
They invited us not to come if we weren't in shape.
Oh, is that right?
That's right.
Did you develop any aches and pains along the way, or did you have them pretty well worked out before you started?
Surprisingly, I didn't have any sore muscles. No sore muscles in my legs.
Mm-hmm.
I did get a blister on one toe the fourth day, and I think that was because our shoes got so wet the third day. Mm-hmm. Coming over the Canadian side, we went through a lot of snow fields and had to walk through a lot of water. We just couldn't avoid the water. And by the time we camped that night, everyone's shoes, no matter how well oiled, were just soaking. And the next morning, I could hardly get my boots back on. I think that was the reason. That was the only thing that bothered me, was one blister.
How was the weather during your trip?
It was beautiful. We had one night when it rained, and all the rest of the time it was sunny or
and
just
clear
with a few clouds.
Just
beautiful.
Second night when we stopped at sheep camp, it rained. But our tent was waterproof.
What kind of tents did you have? Were they nice big ones or the little tiny ones that you can't even sit up in?
There were three women tents, I'd say.
three-person tents.
Yeah. Three-person tents. Well, in our case, we're women.
So you had to get along well. To
we never did. We fought all the time.
Come on.
The weather up at the summit, though, is just absolutely glorious. And I had two cameras. One I was taking black and white, and one I was taking color. And when you're trying to get a good exposure, you have to stop, look, check your exposures, things like that. And I was just telling Nancy yesterday, I got a little annoyed. They must have thought I was dragging my heels or falling down or not able to make the summit. But I was taking pictures, and I was just enjoying it so much. They asked one of the guides to come back and check on me. That hurt my little feelings.
Were the three of you unique on this trip, or was everybody else having as much fun as you were?
Well, this was a youth trip.
that's why we went.
That's why we went. It was youths of 12 to 15. And
there was one 16.
Oh, was there one that old? And they were all boys. So... The first night, well, we spent the first night, or the night before the hike started, we spent in a bunkhouse of this Klondike Safari that they own, and we went in, and this bunkhouse is just a room with bunks all over the walls, and so these boys were all running around, and they saw the three of us come in, and one of them said, "What are you doing here?" And we said, "Well, we're going." And they all turned around and
they went off and caucused to the corner.
Yeah.
And one of them said, "But this is don't you know this is a youth trip?" And I said, "Well, we're youths." And they said, No, what are you doing?" And oh, we told them various things. We told them we were sent by their parents to
spy on them.
And then they decided that what we were people who were from some magazine that were going on this to report the trip.
And photograph it.
And photograph it.
And then when I saw my 20 rolls of black and white film, they decided that actually was true.
Did you ever convince them to the contrary?
Yeah.
At the end.
Before we go on any further, I think it's time for us to take the 7 o'clock break. Mark?
Thank you, sir. Apparently the first segment was on 9:702. Thank you.
First Federal these days. Your money earns top interest every day that's on deposit.
To,
and you can also receive a free...
No, that's 4 hours walking. Actual walking.
We stopped.
They didn't go as fast as we did.
No, we didn't. Federal
account. We left at 6:30 and we got there at 12.
Why, we walked so fast.
Yeah. Even with my deaf ear, that's loud.
What were you waiting to table for? The break? Okay.
Can you read it?
No, I couldn't. I didn't have my glasses on.
We were on the trail 7 hours and 3 minutes, so 7 hours, and we rested 2 hours and 20 minutes. So we were actually hiking 4 hours and 40 minutes
on that last day.
Did you go back to bed when they left?
No, I didn't.
Just did.
I enjoyed the solitude. I just sat there and talked with Dan.
Did you?
Drank coffee and talked with Dan.
You mean after you lost us? The solitude after you lost us?
No, those boys, those noisy.
Yeah.
Oh, they're only a couple miles.
Yeah, they were cute.
What is this disease children are born with where they don't have control of their muscles? Muscular dystrophy?
No.
Well, that may not be what... I'm not sure you're born with that.
Thank you, Mark. Our guest tomorrow night on Beeline will be Rick Davidge, president of the student body at the University of Alaska, and Harris Shelton, who's recently been named dean of students. Tonight we're talking with our three guests about their trip over the Chilkoot Pass, which they made last night.
Last month.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I'd like to ask the three of you about highlights of the trip. Cora, what do you remember as being... one of your favorite parts or one of your unfavorite parts that sticks out in your mind as a highlight?
Well, first of all, I thought we'd go back to when we practiced walking up Ullerhaven. And when we would go at 5 o'clock, we'd take this green bag along with us and collect all the bottles. So I thought we were really doing a good deed along with the practice.
Oh, that's great.
So yeah. I thought that was kind of a highlight.
How about on the actual trip?
Oh, well... I did enjoy all the remnants that were left behind, and it was very historic, and I felt I was kind of walking along with the ghosts, I guess, of the history.
Getting back to the green bags, did you collect a lot of garbage?
Yes, we did. And I guess Mike would go every so many days and collect them in your pickup.
What happened was that I decided after our first hike up there, but it was so dirty, it's useless walking downhill empty-handed. I'd take a green bag, and as I recall, Nancy said, "Oh, don't bother with that." So I said, "I'm going to do it anyway." They would nag at me about my green bags. But anyway, we went up and filled a green bag, and I went up one time by myself, and the bag got so full so fast, I just left it up there. And then someone, in the interim, we didn't go up for about 1 week, and someone... we don't know who it was. Someone else went up with some green bags and picked up a whole bunch of garbage up in some of the favorite parking spots up there. And we filled additional ones. I'd go up in our pickup every two or three times I went up. And I hauled off 15 bags of garbage off of Esther Dome.
15 bags?
15 green garbage bags of junk. Just then. I suppose if we went out there now, we'd find some more.
But I'm sure you would.
But before the marathon, we'll take some more hikes, so maybe we'll do some more picking up. I had a guilty conscience. This is the first year that, for a long time, that I didn't get involved in the College Women's Club cleanup. Every year they have a big cleanup in college area. I was busy and I couldn't do it, so I thought, well, this will make up for it, maybe.
Sounds like you could have gotten a whole bunch of tickets to the Burl Ives concert if you tied it in with their cleanup effort that they held in.
As a matter of fact, I referred to Burl Ives several times as I was packing the Johnny Horizon thing that inspired me.
How about some highlights on the trip, Mike?
I think the highlight of the trip for me was the historic aspect of it. That was the reason I went, was the historic. And it's really thrilling to see the actual trails that these stampeders, thousands and thousands and thousands of them, hiked. And stop at our rest stops and just contemplate in the middle of the winter, in the middle of the summer, and the tons of goods they carried over, and the problems they had, the lack of clothing, the proper clothing that we have today, we just take for granted, that they didn't dream of. And then I continued on down the water portion. My husband met me at Lake Bennett, and we went on from Bennett to Taish and on down to, eventually, to Eagle. The historic part of it, I think, was more meaningful to me than anything. But the scenery was just absolutely glorious. It was beautiful, beautiful scenery.
On the water?
On the water part. And when Nancy asked the guide to come back and check on me, poor old me, I had purposely stayed behind. There was one boy in our group who was a cripple, and he was having a tough time making it up the golden stairs. And there was one guide who remained behind, always remained behind, and he purposely remained behind this fellow. But I thought he might want an adult around, because there were only the three of us and two others who would be considered adult. And he was having a pretty tough time. So I purposely lagged behind and took pictures, and then he did have some problems. I sat with him for quite a while, and then after he regained his composure and his strength, and I decided, well, he doesn't want an old lady around. I mean, excuse me, 29-year-old.
29 holding, right.
So I went on, and it was so beautiful. Once we got up almost near the summit, and the snow was deep there, and I just sat out in the middle of this deep snowdrift that was still over the golden stairs. And I just leaned back on my pack and looked down at the valley, and the sun was broken clouds, and the different ridges were lighted. It was just beautiful. If I didn't forever break my camera, my color camera, I'll have some very beautiful color shots. That was second, I think. And third, I think a third thing that I remember about it is just wonderful to be out away and have nothing, absolutely nothing, remind you of civilization except an occasional airplane that you hear fly over.
My husband and I were in the Brooks Range last year hunting sheep, and I had that same feeling, and it was really great, but it must have been three or four times a day we were right under the route for the Hercules aircraft that are flying to the North Slope, and three or four times a day they'd go overhead. But aside from that, it was just really a good feeling to get away from civilization.
Oh, I like the sounds of those Hercs. They go right over my house on their way north and south.
These were flying up high enough that they really didn't bother us. In fact, it was sort of comforting to know they were there. In case something went wrong, we could have turned on an emergency locator beacon there. And hopefully they would have been monitoring it. But anyway, that was the only sign of civilization. I had the same kind of a feeling that you had. Nancy Mendenhall, how about you? Did you have any highlights that stick out in your mind from the trip?
Well, there were lots and lots of highlights. I don't know really how you can pick out just a few. I suppose the highlight of the whole trip is going up the pass and standing there at what's called the Scales, which is at the foot of the pass. It's an area where people used to weigh the baggage or the cargo that was supposed to go up the pass on these tramways. And standing and looking up at the at all these tumbling rocks. It's the pass is actually has an angle of about 45 degrees, which is much steeper than it sounds. And I hadn't expected the great huge rocks. They're not really boulders. They're rectangular shaped, and I think the highlight is being able to go up it.
Got a feel, right?
You know,
it must feel pretty good when you
You get halfway up and you'd sit down to have a little rest, you'd look up and then you'd look down, and I don't know which was worse. But there were so many wonderful things to see along the trail on the American side between Skagway and the pass. The border, of course, is right at the summit. The trail goes through beautiful forests and woods with ferns and wildflowers, and it's just perfectly beautiful. On the Canadian side, it's more barren, drier. There's very little foliage. It's at least as you go over the summit, and there was a great deal of snow. The lakes were largely covered with ice.
The whole trip really was, there were just so many highlights, it's very difficult to pick out any.
Were there other groups that were hiking on the trail at the same time that your group was?
Well, there were individuals. There were individuals that passed us going the other way. We of course, were going from Dyea to Bennett. And one day we passed one couple. Another day we passed, I think, eight people. Mm-hmm. So it's becoming really well-traveled.
And the fourth day, we there were seven people at the fourth day on the trail. Mm-hmm. The day you went ahead and went to Bennett. And then there was one lone hiker who came in and used the shelter at Sheep Camp.
What does the trail itself look like? Is it a big, well-traveled path, or is it not so well-defined?
Well, it's very easy to follow. On the American side, there was only one place, really, that I felt you could get off and you'd very quickly get back on. You can tell... It's a well-hiked trail. On the as you go up and get into the rocky area, then they there is no real path or trail, but they mark it by piling
stones
with some flagging on it. And then as you get up into the snow area, they use metal posts with flagging.
So you really don't have to worry about losing your way then?
There's some tremendous snow drifts on the summit. Particularly on the Canadian side, some very, very deep snow drifts.
Does that snow stay there all year round, or?
I think it melts off at the summit. Yeah, it does. In June.
Does it?
In August. Mm-hmm.
Is there enough traffic that the snow is off the actual trail itself, though?
There's no trail there. Once the snow goes, it's easier really to walk over the snow. They say, at least that some of the guides mm-hmm. in our group said it was easier to hike it in June because there was more snow and less rocks to fall down over.
Did you have to cross some snowdrifts?
A lot of them, yeah. Yeah, we walked. Our trail just followed the drifts on the Canadian side.
They're well enough packed that you don't have to do things like wear snowshoes, though.
No.
Yeah, that would really be a hassle, I would imagine.
No, in high velocity, wind velocity areas like that, like in the North Slope, the wind blows so much all the time that you can walk right on the surface. Packs it solidly. Mm-hmm.
Mike, you kept a diary of your trip. Are you going to do anything with it with regard to writing it up? Or
no, I don't think
so. Articles or pictures coming out of it?
I don't know.
You just did it for the fun of it?
I just wanted to keep track of what we were doing. I was just looking right here. I got sunburned. I got sunburned all the time. I was constantly sunburned.
Did you have to do your own cooking, or did the guides help out there?
Well, they cooked for us, but we did help. We did have a cook, and she also was a guide.
Yeah. But before we got to Eagle, everyone was helping. Whoever wanted to help, helped. Each one helped with the dishes. Each one took turns with the dishes mm-hmm. on the river portion of the trip.
They had a plastic bag, I noticed, and each bag was marked, you know, for stop number one, stop number two, so they had the supplies, you know, in each bag.
Was it mostly freeze-dried food, the kind of things that you expect backpackers to carry? How do you like that kind of food?
I think this was dehydrated.
Was it?
And I think there's a difference, but I'm not enough of a backpacker to know.
I do it again, I know I'm going to take a great, huge plastic sack, maybe a Fairbanks garbage sack full of candy bars. No, not that many, but I will. I didn't. I just assumed that we'd have enough of that, and I made the mistake of not carrying extra, but I won't make that mistake again if I go again.
Will you go again, all three of you?
Oh, maybe. I'd go again. Yeah. I wouldn't want to go with a group like that. I'd like to go just maybe the three of us and some others who were talking about going. But for a first time, I, not knowing the territory and not being a youth, I didn't want to take too many chances, so I would really like to do it again. I'd like to do it in September or the last part of August when
it's colder, probably. Though.
Colder, but the colors would be really
and the
beautiful.
Berries.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you had beautiful weather. Was it hot or just comfortable?
Some days it was hot.
In the beginning, it was hot. And as we climbed higher, it got cooler.
Yeah, it's nice when it's cool because then your pack isn't sticking to your back because you're sweating so hard. But it's hard to pass up nice hot weather, too. I know. Do you have any plans to undertake other projects like this? Other hikes throughout the state?
Oh, I don't know. We haven't caucused lately.
Well, of course, now that we're in such good shape, we feel we must do the marathon again.
I was going to ask you about that. Are you going to, really?
We're planning to. But we better talk about that. The only thing that we really decided on this trip is when we were in Skagway, we had an extra day there, and we just had a wonderful time going from gift shop to gift shop. And in Fairbanks, occasionally I stopped in at a gift shop. But we decided that when we got to Fairbanks, the three of us would get together and set aside one day and do nothing but go through the gift shops in Fairbanks, because we had such a good time doing it in Skagway. So that's about the only real decision we made, wasn't it, Carla?
Yeah. Well, she bought her beads that she's wearing at Skagway.
Actually, these I got somewhere else. I bought another set like this for a friend. They're ivory chips.
They're quite attractive. Mm-hmm. They're ivory chips, about an inch long, I guess, interspersed
some
with brown beads.
Yeah.
And
the really little beads are just wood.
Mike, you mentioned that there weren't very many relics along the trail, but I guess you meant things that could be picked up probably and taken away. Is that right?
I think anything that's, you know, small enough to be picked up has been picked up.
A long time ago.
Just a couple of days ago, I was talking to Forbes Baker, who lived in Skagway when he was a real young fellow, and he was telling us about when he went up there. He and his family lived in Skagway, and they walked up there, and he said they found all kinds of, at that time, was about 1910 or so. Lots and lots of relics, but there are very few left. And people have a tendency, for example, at Fort Selkirk, when we were there, a big group of Canadians came in, 25 altogether, counting all the children. And they just went around, completely around Fort Selkirk, picked up every bottle, pan, everything they could find, put them in a big pile, and they were going to save them. They were from Toronto. I guess they figured that nobody else would ever be along to look at them. And they also helped themselves to a camp stove from a camp upriver, up the Yukon, and just put it in their boat and carried it off, and they were going to take it to Dawson with them. I apparently figured no one else would ever make that trip again. And they were the only ones. And this Indian man, who was the caretaker with no legal authority there at Fort Selkirk, was really concerned. He finally did speak to them. And our group got accused of stealing the camp stove from the upriver. So we straightened them out on that. Funny thing, too, it just shows you how thoughtless people are. We got to Dawson. And I don't know these people, so I can talk about them. I don't even know their name. They seem nice enough, but thoughtless. They got to Dawson, and they beat us to Dawson, thank goodness. And when one boat went in, my husband and I and Skip Burns and another person went in early and went ahead of the others. There they were with their boat and all their gear on the bank, right by the Bank of Commerce in Dawson. They had a beautiful husky dog. They had him on about a 15-foot chain.
Oh, hey.
And they had the chain tied to the rotor apparatus of a helicopter, which is stationed right there. And my husband we were waiting by the boat to make contact with our friend, our fearless leader. We didn't want to lose him. So Jim loves... my husband Jim just dearly loves Fig Newtons, and I had this package of Fig Newtons I'd taken with us, and it was almost gone, but there were two or three that resembled a cookie somewhat, and lots of crumbs. And Jim ate what was left of the cookies, and then he started giving these crumbs to the dog, and I said, these people acted so peculiarly there at Fort Selkirk. I said, hey, Jim, quit feeding cookie crumbs to that beautiful husky. Those people probably give him a very special diet. Two of the men on that trip were MDs. And I said, they probably feed him special stuff. Don't give him that goop. He said, oh, it's not going to hurt that dog. So he keeps feeding him these crumbs, and pretty soon the owner of the helicopter comes down. He sees this big long chain, this huge big husky, huge beautiful dog chain that he walked over, and he unchained it and threw it on the ground. He says to my husband, that's no place to chain a dog. And I had to agree, there's no place to chain a dog. And I thought, holy smoke, Jim's the only one in Dawson today wearing a red hat and a red shirt. That pilot's going to go around town and say, that stupid so-and-so over there in a red hat and red shirt had his dog tied to my helicopter. So quickly I thought, aha, I better straighten this out right away. So I went up and I said, are you the pilot? And he says, yep. I said, See that man in the red shirt and red hat? Who was feeding the dog? He said, yep. I said, that's my husband, but it's not our dog. So it belongs to those people over there. He says, well, and I said, I agree, it's no place to chain a dog. He says, well, some people are pretty thoughtless. Anyway, I wanted to exonerate Jim before, you know, a little town.
Oh, yeah.
And then somebody say, well, who was that? Well, that stupid guy from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Did Jim like the trip?
Oh, he liked it. Yeah.
Is there anybody that's responsible for policing the Chilkoot Trail? Or does it fall under
officially
the Park Service or anything like
yet
that?
Well, I think the Park Service and both the Canadian and American side do. When Cora and I got to Bennett, we had a 3-hour wait for the train, and there were some Canadian Park Service people there who were stationed for the summer at Lake Lindeman. And they make the trip 2 or 3 times a week up to the summit and back, so that there are people watching. But there are signs on both ends of the trail as you start saying that there are no rescue provisions made for anyone who has an injury. I don't know what you do except you be careful so you don't have an injury.
I guess so.
I only fell down 7 times one day.
But there are people that are patrolling it, and there are certainly people along that trail often. But I don't know really what you'd do if you were hurt.
Well, there were two
helicopter problem.
There were two fellows from the National Park Service who came into Skagway, you know, the night before mm-hmm. we left. The National Park does not have any control over that area, though it is proposed as a. It's going to be, if it passes the U.S. Congress and if it passes Canadian Parliament, it will be a unique park. It will start in Seattle and include a portion in an area in Seattle, I think an area in Juneau, Skagway, and Chilkoot, and then it would continue on. It would be the Klondike National Park. And there is legislation before Congress on this now. And in anticipation of this eventual park, I think these people are stationed by the Canadians in the U.S. Park Service. But they're not there officially. They have no official capacity.
You don't have
for
to check
action
in with them before beginning the trip or anything like that?
No.
Mike, do you know the status of that legislation at this point, where it stands in the
No, I don't know right now. I've been meaning to check on that when I got back, but I haven't.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
The Canadians have a marvelous historical restoration program going in Dawson. It's between $10 and $15 million project right now. And while we were at Fort Selkirk, a group came in to look at Fort Selkirk and do some sketches and photographing for possible inclusion of Fort Selkirk in historical preservation. That was established in 1848 by Hudson Bay. Beautiful abandoned site. So I don't know. I'll check on that. I'm glad you asked me because it'll prompt me into doing it sooner.
A couple of weeks ago, in fact, it was several weeks ago, the Associated Press filed a story about trash on Mount McKinley, and I think they referred to it as the world's farthest north garbage dump or something like that. Said that there was a lot of problems with hikers and climbers leaving trash along the way. Did you encounter very much of that on the Chilkoot Trail?
No, I don't think we really did. We did pick a few things up as we went along and put them into the packs, but really there wasn't very much.
I thought it was extremely clean.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's always been my impression that hikers nowadays are really concerned about it and pack their garbage out, and I was surprised to see that story about Mount McKinley. I haven't climbed Mount McKinley, so I can't verify it for
sure. I thought it was extremely clean. We did pick up odds and ends, but sometimes I'd find a little candy wrapper, part of a candy wrapper or a gum wrapper, mm-hmm. but many times you'll pull your hand out of your pocket and something will just drop out without your knowledge, and I think most of it was probably that. What garbage our group had, which was almost everything we had, was burnable. We burned it up in the campfires that we cooked on. But if we did have anything, we carried it on to a designated spot. There were two of them along on the American side where we could put it in a pit and it would be buried.
You mentioned a shelter at one campsite. Are there shelters along the way, or do you have to find your own spot?
There were two shelters.
Two shelters. One at Canyon City,
which is about 7 miles from Dyea, and one at Sheep Camp, which is 13, I think, isn't it, from Dyea. And these are very nice shelters. They're built, made of log, and there's an outside porch, which is probably about 8 feet wide, and this is well stocked with wood for campfires. Inside, the cabin has a fairly large room in which there were 8 bunks. Just rough things with plank, plywood bottoms, and so that people could just put their sleeping bags on it. They're really very nice. There's a stove in there so you can keep warm. Very nice shelter.
Are these open to hikers on a first-come, first-served basis, or is there a reservation system?
No. Whoever happens to come. We didn't use the shelter at Canyon City. At Sheep Camp, it was raining, and some of the boys slept in the shelter that night. And then there was a lone hiker who came along, and he joined them in there. But we slept out in a tent in the rain.
Mm-hmm. Are there any cabins or settlements along the trail?
You mean usable?
Well, no, I'm...
No, they're relics of cabins.
Leftover ones, yeah. Mm-hmm. There are. Did you get a chance to explore any of them?
Well, there really isn't as much as you'd think. For example, the second night we stayed at Sheep Camp, which at one time was evidently quite a thriving place, and there's just nothing there. If you explore around among the ferns, you'll find some old wood planks and things, which must have been the floor of some cabin, but there's just nothing.
Did your guides indicate whether these were just demolished through the passage of time or by... so many people visiting them?
Oh, I don't think that people destroyed them, but no, we had read several books before we left, or at least one, two, and one is called Chilkoot Then and Now, and the other is the Chilkoot Trail, which is put out by the state of Alaska and is a almost a mile-by-mile description of the trail. And so we did know pretty much what we were going to see, but our guides didn't always know and weren't always aware of what was coming unless we'd asked.
Our guides were rather young, and I think we knew more about the history of the area than they did.
And they weren't Alaskans.
We were, some of them weren't Alaskan, but we were there because we were interested in history, I think, and so we made it a point to find out before we made the trip.
Mark, it's 7:30, so let's take the break.
I just got a reminder.
Okay.
You're listening to KFRB Radio 930.
How many boats were there on that water cruise?
Really
did you go in the same one every day? They were kind of raft type things.
They're inflated rubber boats. They have a wooden floor that fits in the bottom.
An outboard motor.
And then there's a back where you can put an outboard motor on. On the long lakes, we use three motors.
Well, now, do they have to portage the boat someplace?
We portage one place at White Horse.
There are more
than
we have 29 there at White Horse. You have to stop throughout Alaska.
Portage
all the way from A to Neck of Solutions to that
and then at White Horse, you get back on the river.
We've been around the Alaska for 58
go
years.
Around the
and know this great land upside
the,
down and
just put the boats, you know, physically carry them around the dam, put them back in the water.
Like our gold account, for instance. A gold account gets you reduced interest rates on personal loans, overdraft protection,
like special VIP
identification,
right
and all the personalized checks
right
you get
to
ride with no minimum
you know,
balance
got over
required.
The Canadian side.
We'll get you an
I just
Alaska
stood
Bank
there,
America.
You know, where the snow
we'll give you all the law allows
down.
On savings certificates.
That was the very headwaters
so
of the Yukon.
Yeah.
All
just,
Alaska,
just that snow melt
we're
right there that went down into Crater Lake. You remember Crater
Lake?
Yes, and the Blue Lake.
It was
still
ice.
Yeah.
Long
Lake.
And then each one gets a little bigger, a little bigger, a little bigger. And then
never up the ice.
One flows into the other.
See you tomorrow.
So it's constant water.
Where are you going?
Just come the night of evening?
Do you have?
No, we got there.
Looking for room in tomorrow's world of education or culture? Then the University of Alaska Fairbanks has a room for you in the College of Behavioral Sciences and Education. Or maybe you're looking for a place in the welfare of man. But the U of A has a room for you, too, in the College of Biological Sciences and Renewable Resources. Education, anthropology, home economics or agriculture, land resource sciences, wildlife and fisheries. We can help you get there at the U of A.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is.
Because you don't just magically walk up and in the third day you get to the top.
On campus and involved in the College of Behavioral Sciences and Education or the College of Biological Sciences. And renewable resources. For the new fall catalog, just write Director of Admissions, University of Alaska, Fairbanks.
But we were still only about 600 feet elevation that second night to Chief Camp.
Doyon Limited is proud to announce the grand opening.
And the sign is 3,700. But there's some people we know who are on the trip right now from Fairbanks.
I'll ask you about that one tomorrow. That's great.
Beat the Mises
and Jeglum.
Jeglum just came back.
With their family. How many were there? Six?
Five. I don't know. How many children do they have?
But I think another couple went.
Oh, I guess you're
with
right.
With Jeglums?
Mm-hmm. I don't know the name.
Well, why don't you mention them, and I'll mention a couple I know who went over last year, besides those I mentioned already.
What's Mises' first name? Jack.
Our guests this evening on Beeline are Mike Dalton, Nancy Mendenhall, and Cora Cook. They've been hiking over the Chilkoot Pass. Tomorrow evening on Beeline, our guests will be Rick Davidge, president of the student body at the University of Alaska, and Harris Shelton, who has just recently been named Dean of Students. During the break, we were talking about other Fairbanksans who have also made the same trip that Mike, Nancy, and Cora made. Some of them are doing it this summer. Who wants to start off and tell us about that? Cora?
Well, the Jeglums are going, or have gone. It's Mr. and Mrs. and their three children, and then they had another couple with them. And
they're gone now, aren't they?
They've come back.
Oh, they're back.
Mm-hmm. But the Jack Mises are on the trip, and I really don't know how many are in that party.
I think there's six.
I know one of my daughter's friends is with them. She plays basketball with my daughter at high school. She's with them. Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, maybe you know Phyllis and Jerry Church. He's with Alaska National Air. They and their two children hiked the Chilkoot and then had a canoe waiting for them at Bennett, and then they canoed to Whitehorse. Now that was in 72, I believe. And then this year, they arranged for a canoe to go from Whitehorse, and they canoed the Mr. and Mrs. Church and the two children down to the Circle. And there are quite a few people who do it. And I noticed when we were at Canyon City, I don't know if you noticed that, Nancy or Cora, but I went through there's a book there that somebody left and people sign it. And I noticed where Klaus Naske, who's a professor at the university, he and his wife made the trip last year. There are quite a few who make it, really.
Did you encounter anybody that you knew on the trip?
No.
Other than the three of you knowing each other?
No.
Oh, I did. I got to... Well, you met somebody at Whitehorse.
Well, yes, but I mean not over
the
trail.
Not on the trail, no.
It sounds to me like you ought to get together and form a club of Fairbanks.
Well, we've already thought of that.
Have you done anything
all
about
those
it?
Over 29 and holding are...
are eligible.
Making a patch and, you know...
Maybe I should wait a couple of years before I do it then so I can join your club. Are you gonna let people in that... do it before they're 29
no.
and holding it
no,
if they
no.
wait until after 2
no.
o'clock.
But you know, there's several incidents I think that happened before we went over the trail that we were told about that I think are not only amusing but pretty interesting. A few days before we started, we heard about a woman who had started out all by herself and went over the trail. And when Cora and I got to Bennett, we inquired of the Canadian Park Service people if she'd made it, and evidently she made it, but she said she'd never do anything like that again. And then earlier this summer, this same group that we contracted with to go had a group of citizens who, the youngest was 49 and the oldest was 69. And they took these people over the trail And the 69-year-old man had 5 pints of whiskey. Oh, one for every night. They spent 5 days. One for every night on the trail.
I'd say he was a smart man providing for his comfort.
Well, I think
he was able to walk.
They also had a lady who went on the trip. I don't know if that's the same one. Was by herself. And when she got to the Golden Stairs, she just froze because she didn't like the height.
She panicked. They didn't know that she was afraid of heights, and she didn't realize it was as steep as it was, and she panicked.
Do you have a sensation of height when you're climbing that?
Well, there you
go. I haven't felt it when climbing steep hills, but I don't know if I've climbed one that steep.
Well, yes, you certainly do, and especially when you sit down and look to rest and turn around and look where you've been, I'd say you have quite a feeling of being up in the air. And as I said, I don't know whether that's worse or whether it's worse to look back up the hill and see where you have to go.
How long did it take you to climb the Golden Stairs?
Well, the Golden Stairs really were the steps that were chopped in the snow during the winter when all of 98.
It was all snow-covered.
Yeah, and they actually cut steps and that's the famous picture you see.
Right.
So those were the Golden Stairs. So there really aren't any Golden Stairs in that sense. It's just these great big rocks, and you have to climb up on them on hands and knees and your feet, and it's not easy to do.
Does it take, how far is that for?
But I don't remember
how.
It's about 8/10 of a mile.
It takes you about an hour and a half, I think. Wasn't that what it took us?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
You probably remember more how you felt when you finally got to kind
of
the top.
I guess it's just such a relief to get to the top. When we finally did get to the top and took our packs off, we saw all these boys running up on a ridge, which must have been 200-300 feet high.
So you ran up.
So we ran up to the top of this ridge, which was covered with snow. And up there were a lot of dozens of old boats, which were collapsible and had been made out of, or were to be, somebody had
prefab.
Brought up there, prefab boats made of canvas and wood, and they were still all rolled up, and somebody, I guess, had thought he'd make a fortune, and they hauled all these things up on that tramway, and there they are, just dozens and dozens of old canoes.
Still wrapped up, the prefab canoes, and they're still wrapped up in the original canvas.
And then, I was going to say, we just felt so good, finally making it, that as we started down, we just sat down on the ridge, and we slid all the way to the bottom.
I was going to ask you what it was like when we got
It was wet
side.
When we got up.
Oh, that was just up the top when we took a little slide. That was fun. I just slid on my bottom for a long time.
But I felt that we were climbing up the Golden Stairs, you kind of had to be hunched over because the pack, kept pulling you back if you weren't careful with the weight.
What was it like on the actual trail part on the other side, going down the other side?
Well,
it's
through the snow, it was easy
wet.
And wet. Well, it was
wet.
It was easy walking.
Yeah, it was easier walking.
But there were places on the other side where it was difficult along that river. We walked for miles and miles, and there really was no trail. It was just over boulders.
Over rocks, and over streams that came into the little lakes.
And it's difficult walking.
Were there very many mosquitoes out at that time?
No.
Not up there.
No, we really had... didn't have any until we got almost to Bennett, and then we had a few.
We had a few mosquitoes on the Taya River. That's still low sea level. We had quite a few mosquitoes. I remember I was
that
off.
That makes it nice when you don't have mosquitoes.
Trying to wash myself and wash my clothes.
Oh, were there mosquitoes there?
Yes, ma'am. There were mosquitoes.
I don't remember. We weren't washing.
No, bathing.
Bathing.
How did your families react when you sort of started thinking of this trip and then when you actually set out to do it? Nancy?
Oh, they thought it was wonderful.
Did they have any interest in joining you?
No. But they just thought it was marvelous.
My daughter was glad I was leaving town.
Oh, come on.
She was actually going to go with us. And then my husband joined me, as I said, in Bennett. But Libby couldn't get off work, or she didn't want to get off. She got a nice job, that's something which she likes very much, and so she did not go.
I think my family didn't believe I was going until about a week. I said, gee, I think I'm really going.
And they finally believed it when you left, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, did your husband was gone?
Yes,
at the time. But did he know you were actually making the trip?
Well,
until
I wasn't.
After you went?
Yeah, no, he didn't know.
Cora's husband was in Taiwan, so she didn't have to consult him.
You just did it, huh?
I did, but I have two boys, and now they want to go.
How old are they?
Well, one's 20 and one's 17.
Well, it sounds like a really neat kind of a family trip to me. I think that'd be a fun way to do it, too. Do you have any recommendations for people that are contemplating taking this trip as far as their arrangements and how they go about doing it?
Yes, go light.
That sounds like good advice. Do you recommend going along with a group for your first time or just striking out on your own?
I don't think there'd be any problem with going along. I mean, I don't mean all by yourself, but with people who have done a little bit of walking before.
But you should be in good shape,
yes.
Because it's no walk around the corner to the post office by any means. It's a good, strong hike. And you should be in fairly decent shape. Of course, we are. We're only 29.
Right. Mike, you went on and made the trip down the river. Tell us a little bit about that.
There were 16 of us who hiked over the Chilkoot together, and then Nancy and Cora left at Bennett Station, took the train back to Whitehorse, and returned to Fairbanks. My husband, Jim, met us there at Skagway. Went to Skagway and met us there. And Skip Burns, our fearless leader from Skagway, met us there, and he had four rubber inflatable vessels, little boats. And each one was outfitted for an outboard motor, which we used sometimes in the long lakes. We drifted quite a lot on the rivers. That's a wonderful experience, especially at night. We drifted one night from Dawson down toward 40 Mile. It was really one of the most enjoyable parts of the trip. But anyway, they shipped the boats and outboards and other gear that we'd need on the water portion of the trip up to Bennett. And the other things that we used in the trail that we would not need, we just shipped back to Skagway. And then it finally caught up with us when we ended the trip. And we went down Bennett Lake and camped overnight at Car Cross. That's where, by the way, Kate Carmax is buried, and her brothers, Skookum Jim and Baggy's Charlie. They're all buried there. And Bishop Bompas, who was an important man in the early days of the Klondike, early missionary, Episcopal missionary. Then we went on down through Tagish Lake and Marsh Lake and the Lewes River, and then down to Whitehorse. And at Whitehorse, we had to portage around the dam. There's a lake that's been formed there at Whitehorse by the dam. They call it Schwatka Lake after Army Lieutenant Schwatka. Then we stayed a day and a half in Whitehorse and bought supplies and cleaned up and bought some more mosquito dope. And
you did have mosquitoes on that part.
On that part of the trip, yeah. But we had these nylon tents with a rain flap that went over them, and they had a mosquito netting door that was I think they were very good. We had no problems with bugs with those tents.
Is that portage at Whitehorse the only one that you have to make on that part of the trip?
Yeah, that's the only one we made. Well, we went through a dock above Whitehorse, above Miles Canyon. We went through a dock, but that's just your boat goes in and you go through a dock. But that was no problem. We just had to open up the gates, go in, and go through. But at Whitehorse, there is a dam. You have to stop, unload, remove the boats, carry them around to the water, put them back in, load them up again, and take off. But we didn't take off. We camped there for a day and a half.
How long did it take you to make that water trip?
We were on the water from the 13th of July to... It was about 15, 16 days we were actually on the water. 2 days we stopped in Richtofen, I'm not sure how they pronounce it, island in Lake LaBarge and just camped there. It's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. 2 days. Well, a day and a half or two nights. We just camped there. It's just so pretty, we just stayed. Then there was another place that Fort Selkirk, we just had to stay for an extra time.
Are there any relics along that waterway?
There are a lot of cabins, many of which are falling into the water because of the eroding banks. they too have been ravaged by the relic seekers. There are one thing that interested Jim and me a great deal was the remainder of some of the old stern wheelers. The Casca, for example, the first Casca, the hull of that ship is in the river, buried in sand, right at the lower end of Lake LaBarge. And there's not very much left of that. Then where the Teslin River comes in, and it heads in the Teslin Lake, and I think in Alberta, and then comes down, it's quite a long river. There's a place, they call it Hudalinka, and it used to be a major stop for a repair of riverboats, and there's a riverboat in there. And so that was an interesting spot because not too many people see that. They usually go up to the junction of the rivers, so that hasn't been torn to pieces. A lot of people want to pick up things, and, you know,
it's
relics.
It's too bad they don't take their camera along and pick up pictures. Really.
I took pictures in a few little rocks, but that's about all.
Did you shoot your whole 20 rolls of black and white?
No, I shot 9 rolls of black and white and 13 of color.
Well, that sounds like quite a few. Nancy or Cora, are you photographers too? Did you share in Mike's enthusiasm for photography?
Well, we had such an experienced photographer along with.
It really was.
Where do you see the shots I got of them going up the hill and I'm behind?
Those are probably going to be classics.
Blackmail.
Right.
But the river portion of that trip is really a relaxing thing. And it's, historically, it was extremely interesting to us. The scenery is glorious. Some areas are a little bit dull, but most of the way down from Bennett, clear on down to Eagle, is just absolutely beautiful. The different sceneries, different. We were lucky; we had good weather all the time, so we really were lucky.
Did you find that other people you encountered on the trip were also making it because of their interest in the historical aspect, or because was it more the challenge of the physical?
Some were interested in the historical on the river portion. You mean?
Well, on the whole trip.
Oh, I'll answer that. I'm talking too much. I'll let Nancy and Cora answer too. I think most of them were interested in the historical part of the river portion. There were some brave frontiersmen with their buckskins and their canoes who were making it for the adventure of it. We ran into several like that. But most of those people we met, we talked to, and we pass, or they pass us. You know, on a casual trip like that, you pass each other quite a few times. Most of them, I think, were there for the historical.
How about hikers along the trail, Nancy or Cora?
Oh, I just felt they were there just to have a good time. And, you know, it's something that sort of catches the imagination and